Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Hello, everyone. We are so grateful that you have joined us today. And however you're listening, we are grateful for your calls. And today we have Dr. Alice Benton and Mark Cameron. And we're always so interested in the wisdom that they bring to the table. And today we're going to hear from Dr. Alice.
Well, folks and ladies in particular, if you struggle with anxiety, irritability, sleep disturbance, and low libido, it may be a hormone problem. Hormone replacement therapy and hormone testing can check the levels of progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone in our body. And premenopausal and menopausal women, even postmenopausal, our hormones are all over the place. And our doctors can be quick to prescribe antidepressants or anxiety medication, sleep medication, which all have their place. And I have benefited from some of them myself. But it's important to do a medical exam and have our blood work done and have our hormones checked, because the problem may actually be rooted in hormone imbalance. Progesterone drops about 10 years before menopause. So that can be late 30s, early 40s. I didn't know that. I didn't know we had to start checking at such a young age. But it can have a big effect on mood and on sleep. And so it's not along the lines of many conventional medical doctors. And so it's not quickly talked about. It's not often checked. But it is worth our while to look at our hormones. Dr. Daniel Amen was doing some podcasts on this recently and talking about the connection with mood. It's a scary topic. And so we may not want to know. We might be frightened to know. And our doctors may not be recommending it. But ladies, this is something that we can ask for and check on. We talk a lot about the sexuality of men in New Life, but it's also important for us women to think about libido and how low libido can negatively impact our marriage. And having young children, raising a family, ladies, we can really struggle with a disinterest in sexual intimacy, and it may be based on our hormones. So we can berate ourselves of, why am I so anxious, irritable? Why am I not interested in intimacy with my husband? It may be a medical issue rooted in hormones. So please consider looking into this.
You know, the other part of that you mentioned, Alice, is so true. It's mood, anxiety, just well-being, whether you're sleeping well or not. And, you know, it's interesting because we can experience depression and not realize that we're depressed. Like we can be lethargic and we can say, well, I just don't feel like myself. And yet there could be an underlying cause to it. And so I think what you're talking about is just really examining every part, physical, emotional, spiritual, and what do I need to live as optimally as I possibly can. And I know, Mark, your wife is a nurse, and I think she was talking about this morning, wasn't she?
She is. We were just joking, because my wife, we carpooled together, and she was talking about this in the car, and I wish I'd listened just that little bit closer, because what I know about this, she could probably fit into a pistachio shell. But I love that you brought this up, Alice, because we don't often connect the physical to the mental health in this way. And I think for what you're saying here, for men to be able to understand when their wives are going through menopause or premenopause, and to learn to give grace to, you know, for mood changes, to learn to ask good questions, just to learn to have compassion and empathy, because we men do go through a certain change, but we don't go through something like menopause. Mm-hmm. And so for us just to really gain more knowledge about that, I'm glad you brought that up.
It's funny that you say that, Mark, because actually there has been studies that there is such a thing as male menopause, and it can affect everything from their ability to move about the world. And sometimes they gain that belly and they didn't even realize that that's where it was coming from. Low testosterone can infect you. But we want you to experience a healthy life. And sometimes your physical life impacts your mental and emotional and spiritual life. We want to see you find that help. We're going to be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Arterburn with a New Life Moment. Jane's 5-year-old neighbor must have seen Jane giving her kids treats because he was over in a flash. My mom said I could have a popsicle, he bellowed. And that reminds me of another story about another little boy who would show up on his neighbor's doorstep at 9 o'clock in the morning and say, my mom said I can stay until dinner. Now, as we grow up, we grow in our understanding of authority. For instance, you wouldn't walk into your boss's office and declare, my wife said I can have a raise. But sometimes we try to usurp God's authority. There are many people out there who know the truth, but to manipulate achieving their own selfish desires, they will use the truth or present the truth in an untruthful way. It's not all that difficult to understand that God has and God is the ultimate authority in life, but how that plays out in life can be confusing at times. I'm Steve Arterburn, and to gain a better understanding of God's perfect authority, visit newlife.com. And thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
Well, we always enjoy to hear a word from Steve as he is wrapping up his sabbatical. And, it's so true in this world where there are so many things that are parading themselves as truth, that God's truth is the truth. It's the true truth. And it can seem like it's lost in a world that offers a lot of different options. But we know that God's word is true, that he has a plan, and we'll see it through. We're so grateful for Steve's wisdom. We're going to go to the calls. We're going to take calls 1-800-229-3000. We're going to talk with Ann, who's calling us from Tustin, California. It's a first-time caller. Hi, Ann. We're so glad you called. How can we help you today?
I'd like to know how to forgive the adults that allowed me to be sexually abused every single night for years as a child before age 5, and the abuse continued as well with my father publicly humiliating me. I've also been disowned before I was an adult in the middle of a blizzard. I find that this is all very extreme conditions. I would like to know, I asked myself, how did my mother even, she took off my clothes for the perverted priest. How do I forgive that?
And we can acknowledge that on the human level, forgiving all of that is impossible. There's so much. There's too much. And it went on by the very people that were supposed to protect you and provide for you. So one human by themselves, this is practically impossible to forgive. But there are ways, there are structures, there are steps to add in to get the relational support you need and the spiritual support you need to do what is humanly impossible. And so tell us, Anne, what kind of professional help have you already gotten regarding what you've gone through?
I did give some counseling to a hypnotherapist because I was a hypnotherapist as well. And I didn't mind supporting my own profession. That's just about it. I had some. I went to the shrink with men, not talking. And I have asked them for a professional to talk with, but it hasn't worked out yet. For the past couple years, every time my insurance gives me a list of therapists, they're always booked. And when I talk to the shrink with meds, they give me a referral to somebody who wants my credit card first and foremost. And it's up to a $250 fine if I miss the appointment. I find that very disagreeable. So I'm still in search of further help.
And you're hitting up against so many of the obstacles that seem to want to keep you stuck in justified anger, resentment, even hatred, perhaps, for the people that perpetrated against you. And we want to help you to persevere to find the right fit of therapist who can combine your spiritual beliefs with the process of forgiving the unforgivable. And so we've got some recommendations we can make for that. But as a therapist yourself, I'm sure you know that it's in the telling of your story repeatedly in the safety of counseling, and it's in processing and allowing, giving yourself permission to be angry and to hate these people, to hate what they did, that then allows God and grace to come in and do what you can't do for yourself, which is make the decision to forgive eventually, especially after you've processed your anger sufficiently. And then eventually over time, your heart can follow along with the decision to forgive. But we also have to keep forgiveness separate from reconciliation, because if these people are still unsafe, forgiving them does not mean being in relationship with them if it's not safe to do so.
That's good. Mark, what would you add?
Well, and yeah, your story is horrific. And Alice put it aptly when she said, "This it's impossible. It's too much for a person to forgive by themselves." I think what I would say for you is learning to grieve first. I think you know, and part of grief is anger, and you may have to be able to be angry first before you can get to the sadness and the loss. And a type of therapy that you might want to try, I know you're a hypnotherapist, but you might want to try something called EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And there's a lot of research about EMDR, and it's different from traditional therapy, because in EMDR you are kind of, you're reliving the memory in a safe place, but you allow your brain to take you with prompts from the therapist, and they use something called bilateral stimulation, whether that might be like alternate buzzing in your hands or your eyes moving back and forth. And what happens is, as you kind of re-experience that memory, it desensitizes you to the emotional impact of it. And learning to be able to do that first may help you be able to grieve. And then, like Alice is saying, you know, having the decision to forgive before you get to the emotion to forgive, and recognizing that forgiveness really is for yourself. It's for you to be free from the bitterness and the hatred and the hurt of this, of what people did to you, because it's truly awful what you've gone through.
And was the legal system ever involved? Was anybody brought to justice? Did anybody fight for you?
Found it. See, that's another thing that's hard to forgive, is that when I was sent to the hospital for surgery and stitches, none of the doctors, like, reported anything unusual. So I find it very, very tough to, first of all, find out that my mother even went to the extent of allowing and encouraging the perpetrators. She would bring them into the house. Besides the priest, she would also bring other people into the house. She did not let us know our own relatives. Instead, she would bring in an acquaintance and say, "This is Uncle Tom," or whatever the name was. And so I was very isolated. Plus, I was locked up. And after being locked up regularly from the babysitter and tormented and tortured, I cried to my mother and begged her not to let the babysitter come back. Right. So it's I need some extreme processing help.
And have you... Since you were isolated a lot as you were younger, I wonder if your healing will come in a group. Have you tried to go to a group of survivors of childhood sexual abuse?
No. I haven't heard of such a thing.
Yeah, there is such a thing. And I think that could be really helpful for you to be able to go, like Alice is saying, and be able to make sense of your story, along with others who have similarities and what you've gone through. And so when we go through a group with others who have a similar experience, we're able to share sometimes more openly, because we know that they feel similarly, because their experience has been the same. So that right. could be a good suggestion.
Well, and you know, Anne, the disbelief, you cannot believe that anybody would allow this to happen to you, especially your caregivers, your parents. And that's hard to overcome, but it is possible. We do hear stories of people overcoming horrific experiences like this, but there is a system, just like what you were saying, Alice. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't give up and just continue. We'll get you connected with some help. And yes, we know that it is hard, because if insurance doesn't cover it or whatever, but I want to just speak into your resilience, that you have overcome so much, that you are here, and you have a story to tell that could help others as well. And we're going to send you a copy of Dr. Dave Stoops' Forgiving What You'll Never Forget. We'll get you connected with a couple of therapists in your area that, who knows, this may be the time that you get connected to somebody who's going to get you on that pathway of freedom. Alice, do you have anything else that looked like you were going to say? One more thing.
The list of people that will need to be forgiven for your heart to feel freedom is so long. There are multiple systems even involved, the medical system, the legal system. If a priest was involved, that the system of that entire church. And so no wonder it's difficult for you to forgive, not only because of the crimes that were committed, but there were so many people that turned a blind eye, didn't take action, and participated in your abuse. Oh, Anne, we'll be praying for you. We're so sorry for what you've gone through.
And, you know, I don't know about you, Alice, or Mark, but, you know, whenever I've heard clients that have talked about childhood abuse and the adults around them did not protect or did not report, it's so disconcerting. And so I want to say to you who are maybe, in those roles where somebody tells you something, a child tells you, believe them and do the next right thing so that we don't hear stories 30 years from now where somebody says, like what Ann said, that, you know, they didn't help me. I don't, you know, I'm a child. I just want to encourage you. It's hard to make those reports, but it is life saving. And we want to encourage you to do that. We're going to go back to the calls and we are taking calls 1-800-229-3000. We're going to talk with Susan, who's calling us from Bozeman, Montana, listens and watches on YouTube. You can do the same. And if you are watching on YouTube, click that like and share button so that others will know about New Life. Hi, Susan. We're glad you waited. How can we help you today?
Yes. I'm calling about my sister who is not legally married. She had a ceremony. My pastor performed one for her, but it's not legally. So it's not recorded. And the guy she's with said that he would not marry her legally. And the pastor said he had done that for his mother-in-law and her live-in boyfriend. But my sister says she's under God's grace. And when she's at my church, I see it all the time. I'm reminded of it in my head. And I've been wanting to ask my pastor, so if you really believe people can be married but not legally, then I want you to preach it from the pulpit. That's what I want you to do. And she knows they weren't married, but she's now talking differently, like they are. And that I put the idea in her head that she isn't, and she'd been crying and wanting me to pray with her for quite a few years now, wanting him to marry her, but now she's talking different. And then one day when she was going to leave because she felt like, you know, she needed to do the right thing, she said a voice told her not to leave. So she said that was a miracle. She stayed, and we even had a friend who was going to rent her a room at that time when she was going to leave, but now she's staying. And I don't know. I feel like there's something between us that's not right and has to do with the faith, you know, and that. So,
Susan, what a complicated situation, and your sister is worried about whether or not she's in alignment with God's will. And when you bring it up, it sounds like there's anxiety for her, there's sadness, so there's some discord in relationship with you and your sister. Would you explain, if you know, why won't her husband marry her legally?
He's afraid of anyone controlling him. And she's asked him several times since she's been there, I want you to marry me. I want us to get married. And he says, I won't marry you. And then one day, I guess he walked away and says, I'll go talk to my lawyer, and came back and said, he said I would lose my house. But he's fearful of any kind of control. And he used to be an elder in a church of his a long time ago, I guess. But he doesn't like anyone controlling him. And if she wants to pray, he says, make it short. You know what I mean?
So there's a control concern. Thank you for answering that. And can you quick leave us with a question we can consider over the break? How can we help you today?
I just wondered, I want to tell my pastor, why are you telling her she's okay to be married this way?
We'll be back with an answer Maybe after this, Susan.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are so glad that you joined us today. And, you know, we are always excited to be able to hear from you. So please call us 1-800-229-3000. Right now, we are talking with Susan, who has just a real conflict with her sister's life and just trying to understand all of the facets of this situation with her, I guess it would be common-law husband. But Alice, you had asked a question before the break. Why don't you continue?
Susan, it ended up that you want our help in addressing your pastor. Would you tell us, was there another time historically where you were very disappointed with a church leader?
Actually, not. No. I just didn't know that part. Because apparently he did a ceremony for his mother-in-law and her boyfriend. And see, when I heard that, and then there's my sister, because I don't know if he's done any others. And I was wondering.
So finding out about this has really hurt your trust in your pastor. Is that right?
Yeah, I feel like it's not the same.
Mm-hmm. And have you already tried to address this with him individually?
No, but I've been pondering it.
And what's your hesitation to ask for a private conversation with him?
Just getting bold enough and go do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this could be really intimidating to have it. I think you're right to try to talk with him directly. And I would encourage you to craft what you want to say ahead of time, because that will help you have the courage to ask for the talk with him and to let him know that I've been feeling unsettled, uncertain, worried, maybe even angry because of the advice that you gave my sister. And I believe you've given that advice to other people, and it's left me even spiritually confused. So it'd be helpful if you would give me an explanation for why you went about this, and biblically, why do you think this is supported to give this kind of advice to people? How would it be for you, Susan, to have a conversation like that with him?
Well, it's probably going to be the best thing to just go ahead and do it.
It's kind of ripping the Band-Aid off, because it's knocking around in your head a lot and you're feeling a lot of emotions about it. And of course, you're worried for your sister.
Oh. Yes, I am. I am worried for her. And that's why I'm going to do this. I'm going to get with him and his wife too, because it was her mother that he did the ceremony with, and talk to them. I love them very much, and I think maybe like the people in the congregation, like me sitting there, there's people that probably don't even know that this sort of thing has happened, and to me, I wonder what they would think, you know. So I'd like to say, well, if you think it's okay, then preach it.
Well, but also, Susan, I think that what Alice is talking about is, you know, you have a faith leader who you are disillusioned with, and it causes distrust. With your sister, because you've had these conversations with your sister. Mark, what would you add to this conversation?
Yeah, and I think you've got some legitimate concerns here, Susan, because you know, the reason why we get married legally is so that we can have protections in society. And what I would say is, why would you not want to give legal protections to your spouse? Because, you know, if you're not legally married and your spouse dies, then, you know, if that person has kids prior to the marriage, then those kids could actually have you move out of the home, and that person is not protected. And I've seen this before, and when I've seen this before, it usually has to do with money. The husband, or you know, who would be the husband in the case, you know, is afraid of where their money might end up going. And so I think you've got a legitimate concern to be concerned for your sister, but to also bring that concern to the pastor to say, you know, why would you not, you know, why would it not be important to press the husband on why he doesn't want to provide legal protections?
Susan, when we have... Go ahead, Susan.
I'm sorry. I definitely know that she feels a way about him, and the way he feels about her is different.
Mm-hmm. When we have a perseverating thought that we just can't get out of our head, it usually means a couple of things. It may mean God is nudging you to do something about it, which may be that conversation with the pastor. It may mean it is linked to something else in your past where trust was broken or someone took advantage of you or somebody else in your life for monetary reasons. And it may be that there's a nudging to choose the forgiveness path when you don't have control over these things and you can't necessarily change them. Choosing the forgiveness path helps us to come to an acceptance and to some level of serenity of what is out of our control. But there are a couple of conversations that are within your control to have. So I admire, I respect the courage that you have to go forward.
Susan, I have a question. Does your sister also live in Montana?
She's where I'm at, the same town, yes.
Okay, because I think that Montana is a common law state, which also can create some conflict in this. I can't be sure about that, but I think clarity is what you need. The problem with the pastor is not understanding what, because you said, if he's doing this, why isn't he preaching about it? Why isn't he talking about it? But just having some understanding, you know, is going to go a long way. And like Alice said, that forgiveness piece will bring you some serenity and understanding. And it'll also help you make a decision on whether you stay in that church or if you have to make a different decision. You know, the complexities are many, but your heart is in the right direction. Mm-hmm. You just want to know, what is the truth? How do I get there? And, you know, how do I have a good connection with my faith leader, with my sister, my brother-in-law, mm-hmm. all these things. We're glad that you called, Susan. We'll be praying for the situation. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are so glad that you are with us today. And by us, it's Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Mark Cameron. But you could be someday if you wanted to go back to school.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that we're so excited about is that we had a great group of donors who planted a seed for a matching gift. And it is up to $400,000 that we can match, which will double your gifts. And so I just want to encourage you. Maybe you've never given to New Life before. Maybe today would be the day, because every dollar given up to that $400,000 will be doubled. And boy, you will be making a difference in the lives of so many people. Everything from our radio program to our counselor and coach network, our intensives, it is all supported through the gifts of grateful donors who have experienced life change of their own because of New Life and how God has worked through the ministry. And so I just want to encourage you, you can give us a call by, you know, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You could go to newlife.com, click on donate, or you can text the word match to 28950. We are so grateful for all of you who have been giving, and we look forward to, you know, seeing how God's going to continue to work through New Life. You know, one of the things that we started to do just about a couple of weeks ago, we know that people listen in a lot of different ways. We record the program Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 1 to 3 Eastern Time, and we take calls 1-800-229-3000 there. But then when we are hearing from people who are listening on the podcast, or they maybe watch later on YouTube, or they're listening online, they're not able to call in at that time. Or maybe you listen live, but you can't call in at the time because of work or, you know, some other obligation. You know, we have tried to address that. So we've got, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the QR code, and it is a connection to a page where you can ask your question online. You can also call, we have a phone number that you can call where you can submit a recorded question, and then we can answer it live on one of our programs. And so, you know, one of the things that I want to encourage you to do is, you know, everybody's got stuff. Everybody's got a problem. You know, when we get to heaven, then we won't have problems. But right now we got life, and we got life to deal with. But, you know, I wanted to throw a question out that we received online to Mark and to Alice to see what they would ask or answer to this question. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how can I tell if a relationship is healthy? That's a really good question, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to know the answer to that. Mark, let's start with you. What would be some hallmarks of a healthy relationship?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. I think hallmarks of a good relationship, sometimes people think, well, if we don't have struggles or if we don't have conflicts, and it is true that, you know, the healthier your relationship is, the less conflict you probably would have. But I think it's about the intensity of conflict. When two people can problem solve, negotiate, compromise, take turns, admit flaws, make a strong commitment to change, all of these are hallmarks of a good relationship, because we all go through those minor issues that happen in daily life. But when two people can do that, those minor issues stay minor and they're resolved very quickly. When two people can't do these things, these minor issues become very, very intense and end up taking over the day and can spoil weekends and things like that. And so it's learning really how do we do these things well. And learning how to do those things well takes a deep excavation of your own self. It takes looking at, because these things are all learned. So they're lessons. And so if we were taught these things growing up, then we'll know them. If we weren't taught these things growing up, then we won't know them. And so we have to go back and excavate our childhoods. And many people don't want to do that, either because it's painful or because they think it's irrelevant. But it's so relevant to understanding how we react as adults.
I used to think that argumentativeness was a sign of an unhealthy relationship. So I was so surprised to learn about John Gottman's research. And he found that argumentative couples, like you're describing, Mark, that can have passionate, even heated arguments, but then come to reconcile afterwards and can come to compromise and agreement. It's not necessarily a bad thing in relationship if it gets resolved. It's depending on how they treat each other through the argument, how much they might be condescending or mistreat or name call. Those are signs of very can be toxic relationship. But argumentativeness in and of itself, it surprised me that that's not necessarily problematic if other healthy factors are in place in relationship. I would add to it that if there's humility, if we're willing to acknowledge when we're wrong and that we have shortcomings, that's such a protective factor in relationship. If the people we're in relationship with want to grow and know that there is room for improvement, it tends to make it a healthier, happier relationship. And then if we ourselves are improving because of the relationship, if it's an iron sharpens iron, if there's challenge in the relationship and truth shared in ways that lead to personal growth, those are all beneficial and life-giving factors to relationship. I would wish that just belief in God was a sign of a healthy relationship, but it's not necessarily, unfortunately. If a person believes in God but doesn't practice out their faith, belief in God can end up covering up some of the other unhealthy factors because, well, I talk the talk, I can talk about faith, but if I'm not living it out, it can cover some unhelpful parts of relationship.
Yeah, I think having a repair process is key to this, right? Because that's how you resolve things. And so I would challenge listeners to think about that. You know, is there an identified repair process that I have with my spouse? And if you can't verbalize that, then that's probably an area that you need to work on. And a repair process involves what you were saying, Alice, here, admitting flaws, but it also involves taking turns and listening to have understanding, right? Not speaking over each other. And then also being able to empathize, being able to step into that other person's shoes and say, well, you know, this may not be what I would do, but given your personality, mm-hmm. given your history of experiences, might I feel and perceive things that way, even if I don't agree?
Mm-hmm. It's powerful. And, you know, we have different kind of relationships. Sometimes it's spousal, sometimes it's coworkers, sometimes it's neighbors, family. There's all different kinds, but all of those principles apply. You know, to be able to have, you know, space to be able to have conversations that are difficult, but also come together on the other end, you know, agree to disagree, but to be loving, right? I mean, it's just it's a challenge to get along with people sometimes when they don't always go along with you. Mm-hmm. But it can be really helpful if you can learn how to do that. We're grateful for those online questions. We're also grateful for callers. We're going to go to one right now. We're going to talk with Maria, who's calling us from Houston, Texas, watches us on YouTube. Hello, Maria. How can we help you today?
Hi. Okay. I give right to my question. It is, how do I work through mine and my husband's disunity when we are disciplining our kids? I had been in recovery for a while. We were both brought up in very dysfunctional homes. And I now see the necessity for good boundaries, where he does not, he has not. And I feel like we're stuck on this pattern where he's stuck doing the old things and believing the old things, and I'm moving ahead. And now we're crashing because our beliefs are different. So I don't know how to come together and find that balance.
Maria, would you try giving us a specific example where you wish your husband would let go of an old habit and how he deals with the kids?
Well, an old habit, I would say just old way of thinking. For example, if we need to give our kid, well, now their teens, social media limitations, well, no, that's absurd. Why? Why would I do that? You know, any limitation that I want to provide for the kids is crazy. Like, no, we shouldn't do that. We should just let them be and do pretty much what they want to do.
And how open is your husband to new information apart from you, to reading things or listening to new information?
He's not.
And so, of course, you're worried that too much freedom in certain areas actually can endanger your children, their mental health, their physical health.
Yes.
So this is a great question that you're asking. And we have some strategies that we can share with you of what you can do, even if your husband won't change his mind.
Yeah, I love that question, Maria. And you guys are headed into teenage years. You're going to need all the help that you can. You know, it is a new world. You know, 20 years ago, we weren't parenting worried about social media at that time. We barely even knew how to text at that point, right? But it's a new way to look at things, and we have to be able to have conversations, going back to what you guys just talked about with healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. Well, Maria, we have some wise people, and we're going to give you some wisdom after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, in case you didn't know it, our New Life intensives have changed the lives of so many people over 20 years. We've been helping people through our intensives like Every Man's Battle or Intimacy in Marriage, Restore. And it's the power of a small group. We really look forward to seeing how lives are changed. We're going to do an online Every Man's Battle on April 13th. And so it may be the next best step for you men who are dealing with sexual integrity issues, or maybe you're not dealing with it and that's what you need to do next. So just give us a call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or go to newlife.com for more interest or more information about our intensives. Right now, we are talking with Maria, who's about ready to enter into the teenage parenting years, but she and her husband are having some difficulty coming together on a strategy, on a plan. And Alice and Mark, we were talking with her. Alice, why don't you start, and then we'll go to Mark after you're done.
Well, I do have some suggestions I'll be sharing with you in a moment, Maria. Mark has some fabulous questions to try to help us understand what's behind your husband's resistance to putting any limits on the kids.
Yeah. Was your husband controlled as a child, Maria?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's what I was wondering here, because he's kind of reliving his experience now with your kids. He felt that control, and now he doesn't want to control his kids.
You know, Mark, that's a fabulous point that you made, because I feel sometimes, and I have said this to him before, it's not about you, it's about the kids, because I feel like he's taking it to a different level, to where I'm talking to him. Like, it's so bizarre.
And he won't reason with you, probably because he couldn't reason with a parent. And I wonder if he has, you know, underneath that fear, that control, is this fear of rejection, that maybe that your kids will reject him.
Yeah. 100%.
Would he be open to you kind of just saying that out loud?
I don't know. He gets extremely defensive every time I try to bring up something. He feels judged, extremely judged. So he jumps right away to, you know, I'm judging, I'm being critical. So I try not to anymore, because it just opens a new can of worms.
No matter how gentle you are, Maria, I think he's hearing his parents through you.
Yes.
And that's so unfair to you.
Yes, 100%.
No, I will acknowledge that we wives, when we're afraid, we can slip into nagging, or there can be a harsh tone to my voice when I'm anxious and I'm worried for my kids and I feel like my husband's not on board with me. So we can add to his feeling that this feels like his history. So we got to be so cautious about that. So I want to pull out one thing you said. It's not about you, honey. It's not about you. Although you're right, for him, it is all about him. Mm-hmm. So I'd have you go back to say, you know, I think I've been taking the wrong approach here. Because I think you are feeling really stirred up, and you don't want to do what your parents did to you. And maybe I'm coming across as too controlling. Maybe it feels like I'm trying to protect the kids too much. So I want to hear how it is for you when I try to influence you to do something differently with the kids. Would you tell me? And this can only work, Maria, if you're able to be just an inquisitive listener to draw him out without trying to change his mind. Because until we can help him stabilize his emotions, I don't think he can come off of his position. So I want you to try to be his listener, be a humble listener, and maybe acknowledge any of those things like nagging or the harsh tone of voice that I sure can get as a wife. Maybe you've had some at some time. And then I'd have you lay out a couple of different options for him to ask after you've heard him out. Can we consider trying any of these things together? Can we start praying about our parenting? Maybe that's the only thing that's safe for him. Could we read a book together? Now, I know you've already said no, Maria, he probably wouldn't, but I'd have you ask again. Or picking something specific about screen use. Could we agree that the kids should only use screens in a common area? Or only if a parent is around? Those sound like real high standards, Maria, but that can help bring protection if he won't help you limit social media. Of any of those four, do you think any one of them sounds doable for him?
I think maybe trying again to read a book. I tried to read the How We Love, and we got to maybe the second page of How We Love, and he was asking about the past, the family of origin, and he could not do it. Mm-hmm. It was just too much for him to remember, to acknowledge anything that happened.
Well, he is carrying a boatload of pain about his past, and it is just intolerable for him to even think about it or talk much about it, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
it's sad.
Well, but Maria, what have you guys talked about as far as your goals for your kids? Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes what happens in our discussion of discipline, we lose sight of what our end goal is. And so like what Alice, what you're just talking about is having this conversation when it's not go time, you know, but like what do we want for our kids on the other side of us? You know, and also the other thing is, I think, Maria, did you say that you guys have been in recovery for years?
No, I enter the recovery program because of my addiction. And it was actually anger underneath because of abuse that I have gone through to my childhood. So it has been a journey by myself that I have taken.
The reason why I ask that is because there's some powerful shame messages that your husband is exhibiting in his response. Yes. And, you know, that shame message is should have already mastered everything, you know, that I should have got it right the first time, should have never had those experiences. But Mark, before we run out of time, I want you to speak to that issue of those early childhood experiences and how do we heal?
Yeah, we were talking about it before, how you know, whatever we've had before, you know, the first experience impacts all of our other experience. And, and earlier on in the show, I was saying that some people don't even want to go there because, you know, they think it's irrelevant or it's too painful to go there. And that's what it's sounding like is happening with your husband. I love Alice's idea of being this inquisitive listener. And then as you're the inquisitive listener, again, recognizing to yourself that you don't have to agree with what he's saying in order just to continue listening. It, as you're the listener too, ask thoughtful questions. How did you come to that opinion? Right. And try and draw him out. And then when you have the moment, ask, you know, is it possible that we can find a model that is based on research and validated by scripture? And see if he's amenable to that. And what you might want to do, too, you talked about reading How We Love. There's also How We Love Our Kids.
We'll send her a copy of that.
And you can even maybe skip to some of the chapters where it starts to talk about the attachment styles in kids rather than the attachment styles in parents. And maybe he'll be willing to listen to it with you, or even if you are able to read a couple of the chapters or a chapter at a time and then have a, and then bring the information to him to see, you know, what he thinks. Because again, if he doesn't want to go with something that is based on research, then he's really just coming up to his own opinion based on his own opinion.
And I think How We Love Our Kids will be great now that you mentioned it, because now as the kids are growing up, you're starting to see a lot of the bad behaviors, a lot of the dysfunction that are being repeated by our kids. So now he's like, oh, that's me. Oh, that's what we do.
That's it. Well, Maria, we will send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids, and we'll be praying for your family and look forward to hearing good reports, or even if they're a struggle. We'll get you connected with somebody who can help you walk through How We Love as well. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.